I'm recording now as well. So good luck lining those two up.
Yeah, well, you know, it is what it is.
And, oh, are we thinking of going child-friendly as well?
We can go child-friendly. I mean, I haven't specifically gone out of my way to swear in this particular episode, but...
Why don't we test out your editing skills then? Biscuits, did you bleep it or not?
I believe I did. The T might have dropped in though, so you might better work out what that was.
Answers on a postcard.
Yeah, I'd love the biscuits though. If you got any.
Music, start the music.
Hello and welcome to the Gaps in Knowledge podcast. I'm Reese and I'm a geographer that knows nothing about history.
And I'm Will, I'm a historian and I know nothing about geography.
And in this week's episode, I'll be musing over the Missouri, talking about narcoleptic Kazakhs and getting all serious on climate change.
And I fell over. It's all about falling. I fell over. Should we start the show? Right, who goes first this time? Do I go first this time or do you go first this time? I can't remember.
I think I'd like you to go first this time. Because I realised last episode was mainly just like you anyway.
Yeah, it was a bit of the Will show, wasn't it?
Yeah, so let's see if you've improved even further by giving you the stage to begin with, and then I'll see if I can follow it up anymore. I don't think I will be able to, but anyway.
Okay, well, you'll be glad to hear that my misconception corner where we start is geography.
Oh, what?
So should we head straight over to misconception corner?
Yeah, I didn't get the memo, and also I'm nervous now. You've said that.
Well, this is an easy one.
Okay.
Yeah. My question for you is, what is rain made out of?
Oh, for God's sakes. It's right. I'm going to go very geography nerdy here. We're actually at school. Mm-hmm. We're currently studying the rivers. So we're doing the hydrological cycle. So like, what is rain made of? Well, rain is a type of precipitation. Firstly, so that's rain is like a subcategory of stuff that falls from the sky, wet stuff that falls from the sky. So water could fall. Well, I was about to say, water, rain could fall as snow, sleet, and all that stuff. So that's precipitation. So my guess would be water, but you're going to tell me it's not.
Well, the thing is, you see, this is why you should never play a geography teacher at his own game. You're exactly right. Rain is a kind of precipitation, and I'm actually not talking about rain. I'm talking about precipitation now that I realize it. Because, correct, most of the time rain is water, but not on March the 3rd, 1876, when something slightly different precipitated from the sky. I'll give you three guesses. What do you think fell from the sky on March the 3rd, 1876 in Bath County in Kentucky?
Okay. America? Right, my first guess is fish.
Not fish, but fish is a classic. We all love a good fish falling from the sky.
Okay.
In fact, whilst researching this, I found out there's a town in Honduras where it rains fish roughly once every 2 years.
Oh, that's nice. I was about to say that has something to do with El Nino, which is an ocean thing. I don't think it does because El Nino has
It's
a longer a gap between all El Nino years. So that isn't that. It's just flying fish. No, it's not them. But so
my second, not fish.
It's not fish. So my second guess is it men?
It's not men. No.
Oh,
so I wrong kind of weather girls.
Okay. That's where I've got my information from for that one.
Yeah.
And the first one, my serious answer. I kind of wanted to say like acid rain, but then that's too close to like precipitation. And that happens around the world even today. So that isn't good. It's going to be something, is it something really unusual or is it something quite common. It sounds like it's a one-off event, this as well.
It is definitely a one-off event. The thing that fell from the sky was very common. Most people eat it at least once or twice a day. But to see it falling from the sky, that's worrying. Let me tell you about the Kentucky meat shower.
Oh, God.
On what? The 3rd of March, 1876, a lady called Mrs. Grench was out on her porch making soap. And as she was making her soap, she heard what one can presume was a very wet squelch as a whole load of meat fell from the sky and landed on the road. And then more meat, until it's just raining meat. Just a huge amount of meat falling from the sky.
Is this processed meat? Is it just, or is it literally cows falling from heaven?
Oh, we'll get there. No, it's chunks of meat. The chunks of meat, they're about 5 centimeters by 5 centimeters. Sorry, so about the size of a thumb.
And just before we go on, she was making soap.
Yeah, she's making soap.
Who
is that? The weirdest part of the story for you so far?
No, it's not. But it's still noteworthy.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, what do you need for soap? Some like ashes and a bit of fat, and chuck it all together, and you make soap.
Fair enough. I mean, soap has to be made for it to be used, which is probably the most ridiculous sentence I'm going to say today. But
well, that was either extraordinarily profound or extraordinarily shallow. I'm not quite sure which.
I reckon it was the latter, but let's move on.
Yeah, probably. So she, being an American from 150 years ago, thought, oh, this is a sign from God. What isn't recorded is what she thought that sign meant. She didn't say what she thought God was saying to her, which, what kind of a message could your God be sending to you by chucking a whole load of meat on the road? I'm not entirely sure.
Did she misinterpret a message from God that really wasn't from God anyway? There's a lot of misinterpretations there.
There is. The angels have definitely changed since biblical times.
Right.
They used to speak in English and now they're speaking in meat.
Oh, dear.
We don't really know what caused it. The best bet is that apparently when vultures get a bit scared, they all vomit. And if one of them vomits, then everyone vomits. It's like a kind of, you know, have one person yawns, then everyone in the room starts yawning. And
right.
My sincere apologies to all of our listeners who are now yawning. Sorry about that. That's kind of the same thing with vultures and with vomiting. If one of them voms, they all go. And so it's probably that a big flock of vultures just boked up their lunch at once.
Like, I mean, that's, you don't want to go out on a drinking night with them. Well, actually, that's what happens with most people anyway. But
it is. And I mean, tactical chunders, but yeah. That would be so easy. Just 3, 2, 1, yes. And then we're all back in the game. But my personal favorite detail from this is that we don't know what kind of meat it was. It looked like beef, but see if you can find the point at which, reading this, that I got particularly excited. The two men who came up and saw the meat and tried it reported that it tastes a little bit like venison and a little bit like lamb.
I'm sorry, they tried it, didn't they? Of course they did. Right. Firstly, did they eat it off the floor? And if so, or not, like, did they cook it? Or did they prepare it? Did they? I mean, that is...
Huh. Kent, that looks like meat to me. Well, it sure does, Bob.
I'm sorry. That's such an American thing to do. It really is.
It's very good.
Okay, I take it back. Her making soap was the most uninteresting part of this whole story.
Well, it started a little bit like, huh, making soap? But no, they a little bit of road sashimi. Because why not?
Wow.
So that's the Kentucky meat shower. It's sometimes other things fall from the sky. And I found out about a couple of other things. Fish, as you mentioned, spiders, which is a literal nightmare. Frogs and toads. Jellyfish falling from the sky. That sounds particularly gross.
That sounds stingy.
Worms. And you don't want a jellyfish in the eye. And my personal favorite is blood. Apparently, it happens fairly regularly. Blood just falls from the sky. Yes.
Yeah, I have no words for that. Why? How? What? You can't leave me on that one.
It's probably dust. It's probably dust and water, like kind of iron-rich dust. But
that's minging.
It certainly looks like blood.
And also,
nobody's reported whether or not it tastes like blood. So
these Americans here, they might do us a favor if they can find out. But we have forgotten one thing. Men as well. Go back to men. The web and girls.
It does rain men. Hallelujah.
Okay. Shall I go on to my myth? Yeah, a misconception call. So the obvious one that you laid out to me, I reckon this one's going to throw you for a bit of a hat and a loop as well. So my question to you is, what is the longest river in the USA?
Ooh. Okay. Longest river in the USA. Now, I'm thinking there's going to be something stupid up in Alaska because nobody knows anything about Alaska. So obviously Colorado, Mississippi, that's what I'm thinking. Mississippi's quite long. I think the Colorado's longer. I'm going to go for the Colorado.
And if you stuck with your guess in Alaska, you were still, you were still wrong.
Oh.
So the longest river actually, in the, to give you a little bit more clues, the longest river in USA actually is a tributary of the Mississippi River.
What?
Yeah, right. So in fact, the longest river in USA is the Missouri River, and it runs 2,341 miles, while the Mississippi is the second longest river in the country at 2,202 miles. So it's about 100 or so miles between them in distance. So the Missouri River flows through seven states. You can probably guess one of them.
Missouri.
Yeah, that is the last one it runs through. But the source of it is in Montana. And actually, it's really, I think it's a really weird, I'm free thinking here because I've just thought of something. But there's a place in USA, I think it's in Idaho, where you can pour water very easily either side of two drainage basins. And it's got a famous point. I can't think the name of it, unfortunately. It escapes me. But it's quite common that you can pour water either side of this particular road sign, and one side goes drains into the Missouri and the Mississippi, and the other one basically goes the other side. So you could actually pour water. That water will end up in the Pacific, and you could pour it the other side like 5 centimeters away, and that ends up in the Atlantic Ocean.
And it ends up in the Atlantic.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
It's quite cool. But there, but the seven states that it goes through, the Missouri, is it starts in Montana in the source, and it goes through North Dakota, then South Dakota, Nebraska, Iowa, Kansas, and Missouri. And it joins the Mississippi River in St. Louis in Missouri.
And they pronounce it weird, St. Louis, yeah.
Is it St. Louis? Is that how they pronounce it?
I think that's how it, because it should be St. Louis. But it's not. I think they call it St. Louis.
Right. Just anglicize it insanely. But it's also the where they join is also the really famous picture where you see two rivers meet and it's like two different colors. And this is the famous picture goes around the internet. And the reason that this happens is because if you have a river that has been flowing for that long, it's picked up a lot of sediment over time, and it's eroded it down over time. And when it reaches the Mississippi River at the confluence, it's such a fine silt because it's had such a long way to travel. Whereas the Mississippi River at that point hasn't traveled so far. It's still kind of in its middle upper core section of the river. So it hasn't had a lot of time to erode the material to get it to that fine color. So, that's what happens when, those famous images you see online, one of them could be the confluence between the Missouri and the Mississippi River.
The St. Louis.
Yeah. Do you want some basic interesting facts about the Missouri River? I've got a couple. There are some nice ones.
Sure, yeah. And then I have a question for you.
Okay. So,
fact me up and then... And I'll ask.
And then far away. Okay, so the Missouri River is home to the Native Plains Indians used as a major trade and transportation route until the advent of the railroads in the 1800s. So it was...
That makes sense.
Yeah, Native American land. It has 60 dams on it, which is nuts, by the way. The first one was completed in 1921, so the Industrial Revolution was in full swing, I think, at this point.
Right. Yep.
It's always been an important source of drinking water since the 1800s, and It has a watershed, and its watershed is home to 500 species of fish, and one third of which are considered species at risk due to water management and pollution. I think that's down to those dams. Well,
yeah, because you keep damming up their rivers, they can't go anywhere.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, but that is, it's interesting actually, another free thought. There is a situation currently, I think, a conflict between the Native Americans and the Missouri River. They've dammed it so much that that communities have had to migrate to different places because they have no fresh water to be able to irrigate for their crops and drink and so on. So it's another conflict between native lands and Americans happens along the Missouri River. But yeah,
that doesn't sound like the United States.
No, right?
What? I can't believe that.
But you had something for me, a question for me. I'm excited.
I did, yeah. So, I mean, this sounds like geographical nonsense to me because the Missouri is longer than the Mississippi. And therefore, why do we call the rest of it the Mississippi and not the Missouri? Why is it that the Missouri joins the Mississippi rather than the Mississippi joins the Missouri? So you see what I mean?
It's a really good question. Now, I looked into this. Well, I say I looked into it. I had a thought. I quickly Googled it and nothing really came through. But what I do think this is kind of how I do a lot of my research sometimes. However, my guess is that the Missouri River ends in the state Missouri. So they call it the Missouri River. Mm. And the Mississippi ends in the state. Wait, it ends in Louisiana. That doesn't quite work then.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. But
is it because they found the Mississippi first?
Oh, maybe.
Maybe.
Oh, that's a good point. But
my question was, therefore, kind of leading on from that, is there a set fast geographic rule as to why you call certain rivers? What's the difference between a tributary and the main river? Why is it that the Orinoco is a tributary of the Amazon rather than the Amazon being a tributary of the Orinoco, if you see what I mean?
I see what you mean. I think ultimately this comes down to geographers to start defining what the main channel is. And quite often,
right.
I wonder, explorers would go up the river rather than down the river from its source to begin with. And by going up the river, you say, oh, this is the river Amazon, you know, and then as you keep going up,
I see.
As you keep discovering more of it, it gets thinner and thinner, the main channel, and lots of tributaries come away from it. So I think possibly it's more of it's from mouth to source in terms of travel and naming. But because you don't discover the source of something, it's because that's harder to identify, maybe. That would be my guess in terms of why they're named in such a way. But interestingly, I think maybe Mississippi could be named because the most of it goes through the Mississippi, or it was, I don't know, but that doesn't work for the like, oh, no, that's a funny one. I actually don't know the answer there, but yeah, because it exits into the Gulf of Mexico in Louisiana, famously in some.
What New Orleans is, isn't it?
Yeah, in New Orleans, yeah. Mm. Good question. I don't know the answer.
Well, there we go. A gap in our knowledge to be filled at a later date. So, my theme for this week, I figured it's easier to just have a theme, even if the theme makes absolutely no sense. So, for no good reason, my theme for this week is falling down. Uh-oh, I've fallen. So, that's Misconception Corner, meet.
That's ahead of a theme. That's, but I mean, do you teach that at school as a subject, the falling down lesson?
Uh-oh, I've fallen.
I've got that pin free today.
Yeah. Well, actually, one of these things, do I mention this? I definitely don't mention this one at school, which is a shame because let me tell you about a particularly bad fall that happened about 1,000 years ago in the town of Erfurt. Do you know where Erfurt is?
Erfurt's in East Germany. It's near Hessen. It's Hessen? Is that? Yeah, it's Hessen.
It's in Thuringia. So it's the southern part of what used to be East Germany.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Just north of Bavaria. And it's a really lovely medieval town. And it's got the oldest university in Germany there, founded in about 1379, I think it was. And in the center of town, it's got a massive fortress. It's one of the biggest still standing fortresses from the medieval period called the Petersburg Citadel. And the idea behind this fortress was it was one of the key spots for the leader of the Holy Roman Empire to come and tell everybody in Germany what to do. I think we've mentioned the Holy Roman Empire before, but I'm not sure. Do you know anything about the Holy Roman Empire?
Did we do a whole episode on the Roman Empire, or is that different from the Holy Roman Empire?
The Holy Roman Empire is better because it's not just Roman, it's also holy.
Oh, God. What is... What's the difference? I have no idea. Is there a difference there?
Let me tell you a wee bit about the Holy Roman Empire. The first thing you need to know about the Holy Roman Empire is that it's not holy, it's not Roman, and it's not an empire. It's what Germany used to call itself.
But that's in the name.
Yep. But you can do that. You can call yourself the most intelligent man in the world, but it didn't mean anything. So that's what the Germans figured out. We want everyone to look at us like we're the Roman Empire. What's better than the Roman Empire? The Holy Roman Empire.
Oh, so
they just called themselves that.
They're the Greenland of of like
they are
naming.
The Greenland
of naming.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. Yes. The second thing you need to know about the Holy Roman Empire is that it lasts for about 1,000 years, and for maybe 20 minutes of that whole 1,000 years is everything working properly, and for the other 999 years, 364 days, and 23 hours and 40 minutes,
oh, well done.
It's a complete mess.
So
absolutely. Thank you.
Was that 20 minutes in one chunk, or was that spread out evenly across the 1,000 years?
Yeah, it's spread out evenly across the 1,000 years.
Jesus Christ!
Everyone there's no kind of screaming of peasants being murdered. There's no ferocious roar of French over the Rhine. Just for a minute, people look at each other and go, "Hang on a minute, everything's all right." And then, like, a pig will assassinate a bishop or something, and then everyone will go, "Oh, okay, that's fine. It's chaos again."
Oh God. Okay, I'm ready for this. Right.
So the leader of the Holy Roman Empire in the 1190s was a guy called Henry VI. And he had been king of Germany. And we're talking about him when he was king of Germany before he becomes emperor, because his dad was emperor. And so we're in July of 1184. And during this time, as during the rest of the entire history of the Holy Roman Empire, there was a massive fight going on between some of his nobles. And the particular nobles involved in this particular fight were a guy called Louis III, who was he had a weird title. It's Landgrave of Thuringia. Landgrave is a title we don't really use anymore, but it basically means a duke. He was the Duke of Thuringia. And Conrad, who was the Archbishop of Mainz. So we've got Louis and we've got Conrad. Mm-hmm. And what they were fighting over wasn't particularly interesting. Conrad had built a fort on a hill a little bit too close to Louis's territory, and Louis was annoyed about that. And so the more important thing for us is they have this huge fight, this massive spat. They're kind of gearing up to go to war, getting their peasants in from the fields to get their arms. And Henry is looking at this situation and thinking, I need to put a stop to this, because we can't keep doing this civil war thing. It happens pretty much every hour on the hour, somebody gets annoyed in the Holy Roman Empire and somebody starts killing each other. And so he wants to put an end to that. So what he decides to do is to get everybody to meet him at the Petersburg Fortress in Erfurt, every single noble in the entire empire, which is the whole of Germany and Austria, at this point Switzerland, parts of Slovakia, Poland, and going all the way down into the Balkans.
Quick question.
All of the nobles are going to meet him in Erfurt. Question.
Quick question. And this is more of a concept or idea. How do you send that message out? How do you plan that to so far places? I genuinely have no idea.
Well, in theory, you get men or boys on horses to do it.
Okay.
And they would, this is what inns are for, inns, I-N-N, around the country. Those are places where you can drop off your horse and pick up a new horse and keep going. So that's how you send a message.
It's a rental car. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, rent a horse. Just kind of as an aside, which could well end up in the bonus bits, but when I did my master's degree in history, we looked at this a little bit. How did specifically the Normans send messages around when they invaded England? And my lecturer said something absolutely insane, which I still can't understand. He said, people have researched the date at which a message was sent and the date at which that message was received, because you can track that in the laws. And they found that there is no physical way for someone to travel that fast. Messages were moving faster than people can move. What?
That's insane.
How does that work? What? But, still don't quite understand how that works.
Well,
they just got the dates wrong, I suppose.
Do they write it down and threw it? It's like threw a rock and then someone's caught it and they threw it again.
And that's how paper airplanes were invented. So, so the message goes out. Of course, your point is, it stands. There's no way that all the nobles are going to come and visit. So not every single noble in the Holy Roman Empire was in Erfurt, but we have a good 100-150 nobles. And these are the most important people in the whole empire. And they are there to come and argue and maybe even have a fight. This kind of thing quite often escalates into proper physical violence. So they turn up in Erfurt and they go to the Petersburg fortress, and they're all there in their armor and in their shining best fancy metal clothing, and they're all kind of clunking about the place as they walk into the deaconry, into a big hall there where they're going to have their first meeting. And when they get there, Henry gives them a big yelling, tells them all off for being so annoying, and then they kind of disperse around the hall to all discuss privately. And as they do that, a plank in the floor creaks and then snaps.
Uh-oh.
And then a second plank goes, and then the whole floor just goes. The entire floor collapses, and as it collapses, all of the nobles fall this massive height through the floor into what was below. And what was below was the whole cistern, the whole latrine, the whole sewer for this massive fortress.
Oh.
This great gaping, stinking mound of turd that all of these nobles fall into. And it's so deep that 60 of them drown in it.
Oh, but what? They drown in poo.
They drown in this huge, festering, rotting, stinking pile of poo. Oh. Henry manages to survive because he was talking with Conrad next to a window. And so as the floor goes, he just grabs onto the side of the window.
He has to be rescued
by someone with a ladder.
I can see why he was standing by the window, because what was beneath
him? Because it stinks.
That's awful.
Oh. But yeah, about 60 people drown in it, and about another 50 people die from the fall itself. It's quite a long way down into this massive pile of poo. And Henry's there, kind of, he gets pulled down by someone on a ladder. Eventually they have to go and get a ladder whilst he's just standing there going, "Help, it stinks." But they managed to save him.
That's mad though. Like,
fortunately.
If you're going to do that and have something... Do you not have like a safety net or safety something underneath? Are you that convinced that your construction is so secure that you're happy for people to walk over poo that height?
Well, normally this hall was just used for kind of, it's not used for big gatherings. It's not designed for big gatherings. And it certainly wasn't used for the fattest men in the whole empire wearing the most armor that they will ever wear. Those kind of factors all together mean...
Oh, I like the idea. They got all of the armor on and they get down, they fall down that way. Some survive and then they get caught and all the poo's going through their armor and they... Like in the helmet and everything.
Just kind of squelching out of the joints in the armor as they shake it off.
Oh man, that is disgusting. That is, what a way to go. If I was in that situation, I wouldn't want to be the one that survived the fall.
Only to then drown in someone else's poo. It's a nasty way to go, because the way, like, how drowning works is your body eventually will naturally force you to breathe in the water. You can't suppress the breath for long, and it's that kills you. The water in your lungs kills you. Yeah, I'm gonna let the boys and girls at home finish that sentence for themselves.
Okay, wow.
So that's the Erfurt latrine disaster. Another kind of falling meat, I guess.
Yeah. By stumbling. This is all about falling, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because mine has an element of falling to it, actually, my one.
Okay.
So this is, you know, by osmosis, you've managed to read what's on my card. So I'm going to tell you about the city that couldn't stop falling asleep.
Oh dear.
So we're talking about a strange epidemic that has been wreaking havoc on two villages in Kazakhstan. It all began in a Kazakhstani village called Kalachi, which is about 400 kilometers northwest of the capital Astana and 230 or so kilometers from the Russian border. And in this place, the locals have been falling asleep suddenly for 2 to 6 days at a time, accompanied by...
What?
Yes.
That's not sleep, that's a coma.
Yeah, right.
I'd slept for about 10 hours last night and I woke up feeling like I'd been asleep for about a decade. What does it feel like for 2 days? Jesus.
Yeah, I can't imagine what it... Yeah, like he'd been in a coma.
Well, literally Jesus. He was right. Asleep for 3 days, wasn't he?
Yeah, I wonder if these guys felt like Jesus after they woke up, though. That might be something different. But they also had accompanied memory loss from this as well. So,
well, reasonable.
Right. So this is, to tell the story a little bit, there's some, this epidemic, I like how they call this an epidemic, actually. It was first reported in 2013 when a woman called Lyubov Belkova fell asleep while selling clothes at a market stall.
Which, we've all been there.
Right, which on its own is not an issue. Like,
not an issue. No, that is a market.
Right. But soon after, the other women working at the store fell asleep in the same fashion. And even the security guard succumbed to the outbreak.
Can we just expand on that phrase, in the same fashion? How are they noticeably falling asleep?
This is what I couldn't quite work out from the article. I was really trying to understand it because that's how it phrased it, in the same fashion. Now, I don't know how falling asleep, like abnormally, I don't know what that looks like.
I guess if you're in the middle of a center, well, actually, if you're a market salesman, come and get your shoes. Shoes. £3 a pound of shoes. I don't know how you sell shoes at the market. I've never done it. £3 a pound of...
And they're gone.
Like, that's kind of noticeable, I guess.
Yeah, but I imagine these ladies are just kind of sitting there waiting for someone to come along to buy stuff. And
this doesn't sound like an epidemic to me.
Not at the moment, no. But
okay.
But Lyubov Belkova went on to suffer 7 episodes of this long sleep, while her daughter and granddaughter only experienced it once each. So far, it seems to be like herself, family, and close friends seem to have a sleeping epidemic. So it could be like your yawning idea. One person just yawns, they all just fall asleep sporadically.
And again, apologies to all listeners who are now yawning.
Oh, sorry.
Are we sure that she's not just really boring?
It could be, but like she pours herself to sleep first.
Exactly. So boring, she can't even stay awake.
Yeah, maybe. Or yeah, but here's the thing: it then starts to grow. So the disease appears in waves, with the second wave occurring around Easter time in 2013, okay. And since then there have been 3 more waves in 2014. So it's happening in waves, like there was one in New Year and then 2 in May. So people are all over randomly falling asleep. So locals estimate that 40 to 60 people have been affected by the epidemic, with some speculating that it's caused by a sudden rise in temperature. So they're trying to theorize this. What the hell is happening? Why are we falling asleep when we don't want to fall asleep? And why are we all doing it? This is kind of like what this is all about.
Very strange.
It is okay. Really strange. So the area is home to the Kalachi village and the most abandoned Soviet town of Krasnogorsk. So the reason that's mentioned is we're looking at now kind of like this old Soviet land, essentially.
Yeah, that rings a bell to me. Is there some kind of big manufacturing center or something at Krasnogorsk?
Aha, funny you say that.
Or am I thinking of somewhere else? Okay.
So this secret town was once prosperous in the Soviet era, with 6,500 citizens working at a nearby uranium mine. Mm-hmm. And today, only 130 remain, and the town is in ruins. So it sits pretty much near a big uranium mine. Now, causation and correlation don't equal each other all the time.
I'm no mathematician, but sometimes 1 + 2 does actually equal 3.
Occasionally it does. You need to ask Pythagoras.
Occasionally.
So several scientists have come to try and solve this mystery. Now,
I wonder what it could be.
Kind of giving it away slightly. But they have conducted... this is a bit I like, actually. And I always try to keep facts and numbers in here to have a little bit of context. They have conducted 7,000 experiments on soil, water, air, patients' blood, hair, and nails, but have yet to pinpoint the cause.
I wonder what it could be. Do you think it could be that abnormal level of uranium in literally all 7,500 specimens we've taken? Probably not.
But there's the thing, just to add to that, tests for radon gas, heavy metal salts, and viruses have all been negative.
We're definitely narrowing it down, but I could give them a hint if they need a hint.
So in these scenarios, it's always good to have alternate points of view and alternate ideas. So could the disease be psychogenic in nature? So one scientist, Mikhail Polokotov, believes so. Mm-hmm. He suggests it could be a form of massive psychosis, like the Bin Laden itch in the US, where people experience rashes on their skin due to fear of a bacteriological attack.
Okay, that is news to me. I wasn't aware of the Bin Laden itch, which is an excellent name for a punk band.
It is, isn't it, right? Although, jazz band, put experience at the end. You've got it named.
The Bin Laden itch experience. Well, this is our 45-minute long album entitled The Somali Embassy Bombing. Yeah.
Do you want to know about the Bin Laden itch? I've got it in italics here, just in case you asked.
So, of course I want to know about the Bin Laden itch.
So the Bin Laden itch is an informal name for post-9/11 paranoia, particularly in the US. The term is often used humorously to refer to the preoccupation with terrorist threats and activities. And yeah, that's pretty much what it was.
Right. I mean, it's mass panic, essentially.
Pretty much. Yeah. Quite an American thing, I think, actually, as well. Mm-hmm.
An epidemic of PTSD.
Yeah, exactly.
But at least we know what caused that. We're not all standing here going, oh, I wonder what that could be. Could it be there's too much fluoride in the sewers or something? No. We're like, 1 + 2 = 3 sometimes. Anyway, what other options were there? It's not psychosis.
So it's not psychosis. But all the 7,000 experiments of soil and all that stuff has come back negative with heavy metals, gas, and viruses. So who knows? We have no idea at the moment why people have fallen asleep. We have no idea at the moment. And you, apparently. However, other scientists from Tomsk Polytechnic University believe that the cause lies in the uranium mine.
The uranium mine.
Yes.
Well, why did we think of that earlier?
I know, right? It's funny. I don't think I mentioned it before. That it could. Did you mention it could be the uranium mine?
It didn't even occur to me, you know? I just thought that was a normal thing to have there with no side effects at all.
So they're saying that it's possible the sleep disorder is caused by a chemical effect of radon gas. And to prove this, they would need to visit the area and establish why some families are affected while others are not. So some are affected and some aren't. However, the agreement for their help has yet to be signed. Now, just put it into context, this article actually is a couple of years old. There is actually... There's an update, by the way, in this, as we go through this.
Okay.
There is an update. But the people of Karachi and Krasnogorsk can take comfort in the fact that no deaths have been linked to the sleep epidemic. So no one's died from this. So it's just like, it's getting a little bit unproductive by falling asleep.
As far as we know, but if these absolute... Don't insult the Russian scientists, Will. I'm sure they're doing their best job. These intellectual lightweights haven't understood the effect of uranium on the mind, surely. Therefore, when they see somebody, like, let's say that you go to the doctor and you say, I've got this massive cancerous lump. Is there anything in the local area that could possibly cause this massive cancerous lump? Nope.
Not at all. Not a single thing. Get back to work.
Nope. Nothing. Anyway, we're all having dinner down the uranium mine. Would you like to join us later?
I can't think of a worse place to have dinner. So just to conclude this, there's, because it's kind of a smash two articles together here. So to conclude this article, so some people have suspected mass psychosis, like the simile as you were talking about yawning, people yawn so everyone else copies everyone. But at this
point... Apologies, listeners.
But the mystery, and this is my connected to the other article, a couple of years ago had been solved and does indeed lie in the uranium mines.
What?
I know, right? It's crazy. It's absolutely... I didn't see it coming. Well, no idea.
I gotta say, you've got quite the job on your hands to convince me about this.
So, I'm gonna try my best to convince you that it's uranium mines that have caused this epidemic of sleepiness.
Because if there's one safe place I know in the world, it's halfway down a mine full of radioactive uranium. Yeah, so, right? All right. Open-minded.
So, after examining medical examinations of all the residents, every single one of them, the Kazakhstan's deputy prime minister concluded that the sleeping sickness was caused by heightened levels of carbon monoxide and hydrocarbons in the air. Right? Are you convinced by it so far?
Don't know where they could be coming from, though. That's the thing.
My question is, is the deputy prime minister of Kazakhstan. I mean, I don't know his credentials.
Has he not got work to do?
Right.
Is he not busy?
But as a result, authorities have begun evacuating the two villages, relocating 68 of the 223 families so far. So, like, there's...
I mean, do you know what, fair play to them, it took them a while. They figured out that living at the mouth of a mine full of uranium belching out carbon monoxide, sending everyone to sleep, probably not the best idea. They did figure it out. But now,
kudos to them. And
we got them pretty quick,
right? But I just want to end on one thing. Now, I've been playing around, as you know, with artificial intelligence. So I put these articles into the AI and I asked it to come up with a witty headline if it was in a newspaper. Uh-huh. It's pretty good, to be fair. So the headline it came up with, and we'll probably end with this, is "Residents in Kazakhstan finally wake up to the cause of sleep epidemic."
Nice. That's not terrible.
That's pretty good, right?
Right. Number time?
Let's do number time. I'm ready for it.
Okay. You remember my theme for the week?
Falling down.
There's a clue. My number time is 3 or 4, and my topic is Prague.
Is it how many times people in Prague have to yawn before they fall asleep?
Apologies, listeners, for the fourth one of the episode. I just hope the people aren't listening to this on public transport, because
no one
needs to see your fillings that many times. No, it's no. Not how many times they have to yawn before. Is that how you fall asleep?
I mean, yawning does help that. I tell you what yawning's very useful for. Yawning's very good for like popping the ears if you can't do it manually. If you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. I find that quite helpful.
Can't do it manually.
Like, well, wait. What I mean is, I don't mean to get my hands in there.
Okay. Well, before he continues, listeners, just pop down the knife if you're chopping carrots. Just maybe pull over to the side of the road, because what Reese is going to say next is going to be absolutely Billy Bonkers. How do you pop your ears manually, Reese?
Wasn't like getting my head, like my fingers down there and pulling them apart. That wasn't the idea.
Okay, all right. Carry on chopping your veg and driving. Fine. That's what I was worried about.
I was simply just when you get your fingers and you block your nose and then try and blow through it and it pops your ears that way. That's manually.
Do you know what flashed across my mind for a second? Is I thought, you know, there's messages they put on those cotton bud things that you stick in your ear, and it says don't stick them in your ear. Are you the target audience for that message? Because you're sticking them so far in your ear, it makes your ears pop.
Yeah, exactly that reason. And I'm right. I'm not ashamed of it.
Good for you. You live your truth.
Anyway, 3 or 4.
So, 3 or 4 in Prague. Yeah.
Is it 3/4?
It's 3 or 4. It's definitely 3. Some people say it's 4.
Oh, okay. And Prague, is it how many borders that Czechos Republic has of another country? I don't know. Is there a dispute somewhere?
It is not that. No, remember falling. Shall I give you a clue?
Oh, yeah, of course it's falling. Yeah, go on.
We're talking windows.
Oh, is it the maximum height maybe of a building that's the regulation or something like that? That was a regulation that has to be three or four stories. Otherwise, it means if people fall out, they might still survive. I don't know. That's my guess.
I tend to go for interesting facts, if I'm going to be honest with you.
That would send that our Kazakhstani lady to sleep and then without a uranium mine, let's be honest here.
I have to say, now that would be the kind of freeform jazz version of podcasting, is what a left turn at the traffic lights that would be. Now, for half an hour, I'm going to read you the Czech Republic's building code regulations on windows. Section one, part one. That would be bold, but no, it's not that.
We would have lost all listeners at that point. Literally everyone would have gone next or off.
Except there's going to be a couple of weirdos out there.
They might well be. That's true. They might well be.
So Let me tell you what it is. There have been in the city of Prague three, maybe four defenestrations in history that have completely changed the course of world events. Do you know what a defenestration is?
No. You're going to have to tell me that one.
Defenestration is chucking someone out of a window.
Oh, does it come from the word Fenster in German?
I think it's the same thing, yeah, and fenêtre in French. Yeah, same idea.
To defenster, fenster meaning window in German, is to throw them out, like to take the window out or something. Yeah, a negation.
Take them out with the window. Exactly. Yeah. It's not what you're meant to do with a window. You are de-windowing them. Windows keep people inside.
Yeah, right.
Now you chuck them outside. Exactly. Yeah. There have been three of them. First one in 1419, second one in 1483, the third one in 1619, and the fourth one-ish in 1948. They're all kind of interesting.
There's no pattern there. There's a 200-year gap between two of them, and one's two quite close together. Well,
it's not like a jubilee or something. They don't...
Celebration.
It's not like Burns Night.
Or an expensive more what's the word again?
Defenestrate.
There'd be more defenestrations, I suppose, if it was more like Burns Night.
There would, exactly. And also, you do kill people by throwing them out of a window. So that would be...
Oh, that is true.
Human sacrifice. So the first one was a bunch of rebels. They were religious rebels called the Hussites. They were walking through the street. And as they're walking through the street, they walk past the town council building. And one of the members of the town council, in an interesting diplomatic mood, chucked a rock at them and smacked someone in the head with a rock from a window, which is not what you would expect from the town council, if we're honest. In Duisburg, they normally just do the bins and stuff, but here they're chucking rocks at people. So these Hussites got mad, ran upstairs into the town council building and chucked seven of them and the mayor out of the window, killing them on the floor below. There's two outcomes of this. One of them kind of make you go, oh my goodness, this led to a war that lasted for 27 years.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Pretty big defenestration. But far more, quite frankly, hilarious fact is that when the king of the country was called Bohemia at the time, the king, King Wenceslas IV, when he heard about this, he was so shocked that he immediately died himself.
What?
He was, oh my goodness, they've been thrown out the window.
And he had...
He was so shocked, he just died. I mean...
Does that happen? I'm sure it... Well, it does, to this guy in particular.
Just to this one guy, yeah. I mean, maybe he was like a kind of fey 1920s kind of woman. Like, oh my goodness.
Oh, right.
Oh, okay. No. I think that's what he must have been like. So the first one, 1419, second one, 1483. It's just fairly standard. There was a coup. The mayor was trying to throw out the old kind of government in the council. Mm-hmm. It's not that big of a deal, the 1483 one. Just chuck people out the window and get on with the rest of your life. The biggest one was in 1618, the 23rd of May, 1618. And this is the period of history if you know anything about history in the 17th century, you'll know about the 30 Years' War. Well, this is at the start of the 30 Years' War, where you've got Protestants and Catholics fighting over whose God is correct. And the only way you can prove that is by having God on your side, which means killing everyone who doesn't have God on their side. The 30 Years' War was basically the First World War. What we call the First World War, technically it involved a lot more countries, but proportionally it killed fewer people than the 30 Years' War. And the 30 Years' War kills up to 50% of the population in some parts of Germany. It kills a ludicrous amount of people.
But how does a war like that end? For attrition, surely?
Yeah, there's just no one left in Germany, pretty much. Yeah.
God.
But how it starts is the Protestants are really annoyed with the Catholics who are in charge of Prague. And so they just go into one of the castles in Prague and chuck them out the window. And the Catholics say, you actually can't do that. You can't do that to us. That's not okay. And the Habsburg emperor gets all of the Catholic forces from pretty much all of Europe. And this starts to involve Spain and Sweden, and the English get involved, and France and Italy and kind of the whole of Europe. And it all kicks off.
That's messy.
About 7 million people die. First World War kills something like 11 million people, and they had machine guns. The 30 Years' War, they've got very basic guns, but 7 million people. And all of it starts with the Third Defenestration of Prague.
Is glass invented by that point?
Yes.
Could they have thrown them through glass? That would be brilliant.
Kind of like an EastEnders style, get out your bard kind of moment.
Yeah.
Just three floors up.
That's what I imagine. That's what I imagine is happening here. And I think...
That's the idea.
It's quite dramatic. And I think that alone would be enough to go, oh, wow, you really do mean it. You've smashed the glass.
Yep. There was a fourth one, which was in 1948 to do with the communists coming to power, but it's not really seen as a defenestration because it's not clear whether or not it's the foreign minister, whether or not the foreign minister threw himself out or was thrown out by the communists. Now, those of you who know what communists were like in the 1940s will probably surmise that, yeah, he was thrown out by the communists. We're talking, this is Stalin's doing, effectively. Stalin had control over all of Eastern Europe and Central Europe at this point in time. And if he wants to kill someone, then he's going to kill him. So that's why it's not necessarily for, because it's not entirely clear. But there you go. Prague, they love to defenestrate people in Prague.
Shall we go on to my number time?
Let's do it.
Okay, so my number is 80 meters. There's a unit of measurement there as well. And it's climate change.
80 meters of climate change. Okay. Is it... Do you want a serious answer? Do you want a silly answer?
I want a silly answer. Come on.
Okay. 80 meters and climate change. You can edit out this thinking part.
I don't have to.
Because I've got a serious answer.
Okay. Why don't you go with the serious answer? And then if you think of a silly one later, you can tell us later.
Okay. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? Here's what Will managed to do. Look at his little pasta picture that he managed to make of everyone. Oh, that's sweet.
Can't do it with crayons and everything.
My serious answer is it's something to do with glaciers, I'm thinking. Kind of how far has the average glacier retreated in Europe since... the 1900s.
It's a really good guess. Actually, interestingly, it's not right, but my final clue is ice, bizarrely. So
right.
if you keep on your glacier idea, you might be able to get somewhere. But it is something to do with glacial retreat. That's really important, actually, to this. And
Okay. Something to do with glacial retreat, 80 meters. Is it the average amount of glacial retreat per year?
Oh, I'm not led you on the path, but I can see why you're fixated on this. So this is more to do is linked to oceans.
Okay. Is it the amount by which the ocean level will rise, the sea level will rise, if all the ice in the world is melted?
Absolutely correct. Well done. So, congratulations, by the way. I mean, it's this... statistic came from, it's making me laugh reading it, sorry. This statistic came from a website called atlasfortheendoftheworld.com, which, by the way, you totally should go and check out. It's tons of maps about sea level rise, deforestation, the amount of air pollution in urban areas and so on. And it's really quite fascinating. Like,
next time I need a panic attack.
But if all the ice was to melt around the world, there would be sea level rise of 80 meters. Now, how realistic is that? There's a couple of things to bear in mind here, actually. Firstly, I want you to imagine that you have ordered your favorite beverage and it requires ice. If there's ice in the drink and then it melts, what happens to the water level?
It goes down, doesn't it?
Well, it slightly stays the same. It's negligible, the change that happens. However, if you fill a drink up to the top and then put ice in it, then it overflows. So the point here is that only ice that is on land, when that melts, that only contributes to sea level rise. It is not to do with ice that is already in the water. That's a massive misconception, because a lot of people will say, oh, if the Arctic melts and then suddenly there's going to be a huge amount of sea level rise. Like, the majority of the Arctic is an ocean anyway. So if that melts, actually it makes no contribution to sea level rise at all. However, Antarctica, which is the South Pole, that's a continent. All of that is on land. And if that all melts, you've got a serious problem with sea level rising. But this also includes like the Greenland ice sheet and a few other random ones in Iceland and New Zealand and so on. If all of the ice in the world, and that includes everything, obviously, but like the one on the land, if that was to go, we would have 80 meters of sea level rise. Now, what's really interesting is 20,000 years ago, sea level was 120 meters below where it currently is, which is mad to think about.
Oh, wow. Way down.
But what that means is you could walk from France to England. And those were quite common transport routes for wildlife and so on. And they are common routes to walk. And you can see that through fossils, because they're not going to jump on a plane and hop over. So there was a period of time where you could walk over parts of the world where there's currently a sea. And the English Channel was a really good example of that. But also, sea level has been 60 to 30 meters higher than the current level through a warmer period. So sea level rise is nothing new in itself. Mm-hmm. Like, water freezes and changes its state throughout all of Earth's history. Like, the Earth's been a big ice ball twice. I think we might have mentioned that once before, but it's been a big ice ball twice. And there have been times where there's been hardly any ice. Hit the mic there, sorry. There's hardly any ice at all on the Earth. And that's what we said before, that if there's ice on the poles, we're currently in an ice age, which is mad to think about, because we talk about global warming and climate change. But we're technically, because there's ice somewhere on the pole, we are effectively coming out of an ice age, as it were. But the other thing that's really interesting to this is, if we did have all the ice melt around the world, we would have 50 major cities would become basically architectural reefs, is a good way probably to phrase it. Atlantis and all that stuff. This is quite an extreme example, but the more telling example, which is like we should all be worried about, is if you have 0.74 meter sea level rise at 74 centimeters, which is predicted by 2100, this would displace, at that time with population prediction statistics, 115 million people be displaced, and 420,000 kilometers of land would be lost. And to put it into context, that's Germany and the Czech Republic put together, which that's is a huge amount of land. Yeah. And that's just 3/4 of a meter sea level rise. So that's a really positive way to end this episode.
Well, I mean, like, I kind of changed my thinking on this recently. How are you feeling about the whole climate change thing?
For me, as a geographer, and I don't know, I think it's actually worse. I think people are more becoming aware of it and taking it more seriously. It's really nice to see people talking about it more frequently. And I come across on, I don't know how algorithms work on these days on Twitter and so on, but I come across less climate deniers. I wonder if it's because I'm subconsciously ignoring them, therefore it's not showing me them. But I think people are talking about it more, and less people are skeptical. That's kind of my interpretation of the of the current world state. But that's just my thought on it. And on a personal level, becoming a vegetarian or eating significantly less meat, I think is to a certain extent reducing my eco and carbon footprint a bit. And I'm much more aware of that. So that's kind of my current stance. I don't know what yours is. And
well, I came across quite an interesting idea. I was listening to a talk by a Zen priest on just kind of... It was on some general ideas, but one of them was climate change and kind of what's the Zen view of climate change, because that's how I spend my evenings, as you should know by this point in time. So his perspective of it was from the point of view of Zen, and it was a very, very interesting idea, which is that there has been eons of time before which there were human beings, and there will be eons of time after which there are not human beings. Human beings only operate within a very small period of time, and the Earth is only in this state in a very small period of time. And so it's going to have to end at some point. And whilst, of course, we'd much rather that it didn't end now in this way through our own stupidity, but And it's not a matter of indifference to human beings whether or not it ends, because human beings quite like being alive. That's one of the points of being a human being. But the universe will continue, and the planets will continue, and the way in which kind of life generated on Earth is probably happening somewhere else in the universe as well. So it's a big deal. It is the biggest deal on Earth, but Earth isn't the only thing in the universe, which is quite a mind-blowing idea.
It is. And all, I mean, just to sort of the way in which I listen to that, I understand, but I also hear it as, so what's the point of anything?
Well, that's the thing. And so the point that he was making is, if you then, it's not nihilism. We're not saying there is no point in anything. We're saying that the point of things is to just enjoy them for a little bit, just chill out, because it doesn't actually matter. It doesn't really matter. You're not here for very long. And if you go to a party thinking, I'm going to leave this party at 2 o'clock in the morning, so I'm just going to sit in the corner and wait for my time to be up, then you're going to have a miserable time. No one goes to a party like that. But if you go to a party and think, I'm going to have the best time of my life tonight, then guess what? You're going to have the time of your life. That's the kind of perspective that he's giving to it, that just because things change doesn't mean you can't enjoy them. I mean, that's kind of how music works, for example. Yeah. So,
well, you heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Forget everything you've heard about climate change. Just go wild.
Well, that's not like, respect the penguins, respect the polar bears, look after the world. Of course, like, this isn't the way that if we can stop the world from ending this way, then we should stop the world from ending this way. But there's no point being terrified of the end of the world, because it's going to end at some point. Maybe that's even more depressing than your idea.
On that note.
He put it a lot better than I did, which is why he's a Zen priest and I'm just an idiot.
So, Will, have you recovered from falling over in this episode?
I think I might have sprained part of my brain, so I'm going to go and ice it. But yeah, I'll be all right.
Yeah, hopefully at this point everyone's managed to stay awake as well from all the yawning that's happened. That's five now. That's five.
That's five. Times. Sorry, people. And well, I mean, maybe as long as you've been sufficiently distant from a uranium mine, then I think you'll be fine.
But if you enjoyed this episode, you can also follow our socials. We are on Twitter at Gaps Podcast, and you can also find us on YouTube by searching Gaps and Knowledge Podcast.
And if you didn't enjoy this episode, then tell us all about it in the description. That's a bold way to put it, isn't it? In the description to the podcast. If you're not on Spotify, you'll find a link. If you are on Spotify, then if you scroll down a wee bit, there should be a question and answers button. Hit that. Tell us something, give us a question or give us an answer, and we'll include it in next week's show.
Yeah, and I wish you and everyone listening a fantastic week, day, or whatever. Have a good one.
Bye.